Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times joins us now. Bob, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
I'm good, Bob. I was reading a report that the Seahawks might not actually follow up and force Mr. Lynch to pay that fine. And is that, I'm assuming that's allowable under the CBA?
Yeah, they're a team discretion, and it's a little more complicated than that. There's sort of two fines there. One is sort of proactive, which is he was fined. The team anyway has the discretion to fine him $30,000 for each day that he missed, which was 7 days. Then there's another part of it where they could take away some of the signing bonus, which he got 2 years ago, essentially, as an additional penalty for holding out. What they're probably going to do is not take the any of the signing bonus away, which this essentially would require him to give back some money. But it's a little bit unclear whether they might give him, whether they might impose some of those other penalties on him, the daily penalty. We haven't gotten an exact word on that yet about whether they're going to waive that or not.
So what was Lynch's goal in this holdout? Was it just to get more money now and fear that he could be released because of salary cap issues next year?
Basically, yeah. NFL contracts, as people are probably aware, but always worth reminding a little bit, are different than in the NBA or baseball, where they're not guaranteed for the life of the deal, and you've got to be on the team in that season to get the base salary anyway. That's why people always say, it's the guaranteed money that you really got to pay attention to and not the overall dollar figure. The Seahawks are not alone in being in releasing guys ahead of time, but there were three pretty key guys that they did that with this year that they released and before their contracts ran out to save a lot of money against the cap to be able to do some other things. And I think Marshawn sees that he's a real candidate for that next year. People have been speculating that for a while now, that he's a guy they might have to do that to next year because of how much money he's due to make and other things that they have to get done salary-wise. So I think he wanted to try to recoup as much of the money that he might lose next year if he's not on the roster and get it now. But ultimately, he didn't really get that done, I don't think.
How much does he have left in the tank, Marshawn Lynch?
Well, that's a good question that we'll find out. I think the team believes he's got at least one more year, but they might not bet on two more. But, we'll see. He's obviously, he turned 28 in April, and that's an age when NFL running backs often start to decline. And,
yeah.
Marshawn statistically showed a little bit of decline at times last year, but he was really good in the playoffs. He didn't really have to do much in the Super Bowl the way that game went, but he played really well in the playoff games against the Saints and the 49ers. And, I still think the expectation here is that's the level he can play at, be that guy that they hand the ball to, 280 to 300 times this year. But, we'll see. They've been grooming a couple other guys to eventually take over for him. And I think they're ready if they feel they'll be a lot readier than last year if they need to start giving it the carries a little bit more.
Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times joins us. Bob, you mentioned the three guys that were released this year by the Seahawks. Of those three, who do you think is the biggest loss?
Well, one of them is retired already, which was Sidney Rice. The other two were Red Bryant and Chris Clements. Of those, Red Bryant was a real emotional leader. He was a defensive end, and he was the defensive team captain each of the last 2 years, and really a guy that a lot of guys in the locker room looked up to. Playing-wise on the field, his specific spot, they had sort of started to de-emphasize a little bit as the year went on. And he barely even played in the Super Bowl the way that game went. So he sort of is. But, there were some other guys they had to lose, just via free agency, guys they didn't necessarily release, like Golden Tate, a cornerback Walter Thurman, a couple of offensive linemen. They might miss some of those guys a little bit more. But that's also just sort of life in the NFL. Everybody, nobody keeps all their guys from year to year to year, And part of what you try to do is replace higher salary guys with some lower salary younger guys, and so they're certainly hoping that they've put some things together to be able to mitigate the losses of some of the guys that they had to lose.
And I look at the Seahawks, and no offense to Golden Tate, none of those guys I think were like franchise type guys that you lose where you're like, man, that's a huge void in their lineup now. Not to mention that Percy Harvin's going to be healthy to start the season. Like, Seattle to me looks primed for another 12 or 13 win season at least.
Well, the team would agree 100% with you because that's why they made the decisions on who they let go and who they kept. They let go of a lot of those guys so that they could make moves to keep others. And they re-signed Michael Bennett. They re-signed Tony McDaniel. They They then, gave extensions to Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin. They very clearly prioritized who they wanted to keep and who they were willing to let walk. And we'll see. Right now, you sort of have to give them the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're doing, because in 4 years, this management team took a team that was, at the bottom of the NFC West, essentially, and turned it into the Super Bowl champion. So right now, when they say, we think this player is better than that one, you sort of give them the benefit of the doubt on that. But, that's exactly what they did. It became evident a couple days into the free agency period exactly what they were doing here, who they were going to keep and who they weren't. And, it was obvious they had a pretty clear plan in place. And I think they would say they pretty much executed it the way they wanted to. But now we find out on the field, this fall, if indeed they kept the right guys.
Russell Wilson's had a lot of success in his career, obviously, the quarterback. What now for him? I mean, what does he have to work on to continue to develop and become one of the greats?
Well, I think the team already thinks he's pretty close to that level. I mean, when you win a Super Bowl in your second year, and I know the argument against him is that, well, they ran the ball as a percentage more than anybody in the NFL last year, that they don't ask him to do as much, but I think they feel like when he has been asked to do stuff that he's gotten it done. They might, as they morph a little bit from the Marshawn Lynch era into others, they may become a little bit more of a passing team, and I think they'll feel like Russell will be a little bit better to handle that. What's the big knock against him is something he can never improve, which is his height. That's always going to be the thing that other teams are going to try to turn into a weakness, which is if you can keep him into the pocket, make him just a pocket passer with his height, can he see over the defense, the line, and get the ball, especially over to the middle of the field and things like that. I think with every year, teams will try to do that, a little bit more, keeping him in the pocket, him in there. A few teams have had success doing it. The Arizona Cardinals, obviously, at the end of last year, the one team that beat Seattle in Seattle, definitely were able to execute that game plan. It's not an original game plan, but it's being able to pull it off, which is the other part of it. I think Russell, they feel like with every year, will be able to become just a little bit more versatile in what he can do and try to make it so the team who do try to just take that one thing away from him or force him to become just a pocket passer, that he'll always be able to have another answer for that.
Bob, right now, I think we'd all agree they're in the toughest division in football with the 49ers. The Rams are good. The Cardinals are good. And the schedule, they're playing the AFC West this year, of course, with the Broncos and the Chargers and the Chiefs, three playoff teams from last year. Seattle's very good, but they got a pretty tough schedule this year.
Yeah, they really do. No doubt about it. I mean, their first three games, I think, are, they play Green Bay at home on a Thursday. Then they go to San Diego, which I think is a really sneaky, tough game, coming after the Green Bay thing and having to go down there. And then they host Denver. And then, as you point out, all the NFC West teams, most of whom they don't play until the second half of the season, including, both their games against the 49ers are Thanksgiving night and then a couple weeks after that. But that's also part of the business of being in the NFC West. I mean, that's part of what makes it tough is that all those teams definitely look like they could be real good this year. There's not much you can do about your schedule but try to go play it. So, last year's looked pretty tough at this point last year as well. And, games against teams like Atlanta and the New York Giants were tough by the time they played them. So you sort of never know for sure in the NFL if every team is going to live up to its preseason billing. But, yeah, on paper, it definitely is sort of tough, but that's how the league is designed. That the better teams, they want to play the tougher schedules, and the teams at the bottom, they want to play the easier ones. And, as everybody always says, the dream of the NFL would be everybody finishing 8-8.
Outside of Marshawn Lynch, what is the most interesting storyline of the training camp this year for the Seattle Seahawks?
Obviously, coming off the Super Bowl and can you do it again? I mean, it's sort of impossible not to just ask that question all the time. The challenge of doing that, I mean, that's definitely the overarching storyline. In terms of personnel, it's a lot of subtle things, really. They don't have a lot of big, glaring, who's going to win this job kind of thing. It's one of the reasons why there's a lot of optimism here that they can keep going, because, suddenly they've had a lot of these guys for 3 or 4 years now, and really most positions on both sides of the ball are pretty set, and especially most of the key ones. The receiving core and how it comes together, they did, Golden Tate, Sidney Rice got hurt and retired. You know, that's a couple of guys that a year ago, those were essentially your two leading receivers going into the season. Now you got some different faces over there. So there's a few positions like that. But, yeah, you know, at the moment, 43 of the 53 guys that were on their 53-man roster for the Super Bowl are still on the team. So it's, you know, while they did lose some guys, for the most part, they kept the core of the team together. So there aren't a lot, you know, there really aren't a whole lot of big gaping, you know, who's going to do this for this team this year.
How much of a role is Harvin going to play this year now that he's healthy, do you suspect?
Yeah, a pretty darn big one. I mean, you know, when you're paying him what you're paying him, you're not doing that to turn him into a third down specialist or something. They're going to get him out there as much as they can. And, you know, not just catching the ball, but, you know, returning kicks and running it at times as well. You know, that was a really effective play for them in the Super Bowl. Really one of the big keys to that was that he was healthy and they were able to run those fly sweeps. And then, you know, just sort of the threat of the fly sweep after they ran it successfully early in the game. And Percy Harvin, if you remember, was the leading rusher in that game, actually. But, you know, the threat of the fly sweep was opened up so many things for them, they thought downfield. So, yeah, I mean, you know, statistically, it's possible he might not have put up quite as many total yards as he did in some of his glory years in Minnesota, simply because Seattle has some other weapons there, and, you know, so they may not have to rely on him quite as much as the Vikings did, but certainly they will try to rely on him as much as they can. You know, he's looked great so far. It's sort of a lot of the hubbub over Marshawn and everything. I think it started to become almost old hat that you know, Percy Harvin, which was one of the big keys to last year at this time, whether he was going to be healthy or not. Right now, it looks 100%, and you know, it looks like exactly the player they thought they hoped he would be last year.
We appreciate the rundown. Should be a very interesting season, Bob, for the Seahawks. A lot of people expecting them to have a really good chance to get back to the Super Bowl if they can get out of their division.
Yeah, no doubt. You're right. I mean, that's job one, and I don't think that's lost on anybody here. You know, obviously you talk about repeating, but you know, they know that first thing they got to do is get out of the NFC West, and they know how hard that's going to be. You know, all six games really that they played against the NFC West teams last year were pretty tough affairs. You know, they went 4-2 against the NFC West, and you know, they only lost one game against everybody else on their schedule. So they're very much aware of how tough that task is.
Bob, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.